So Rav replied to him and he said, no, we don't have to worry about that. We can go right underneath, you know. Why take a long way around? We can take, you know, the short way. Why? The Ikar Rav Ado Bar Ava Bahadein. Because Rav Ado Bar Ado happens to be present with us today, right? The Nofish the Chusei, because he has many, many merits. V'loi Mr. Pino, and I'm not afraid. So Rav Huna, okay, so that's one story, okay? In other words, Rav Barara, he had so much merit that this time Rav was not afraid to go underneath the wall because he knew that the merit of Rav Ada Barava would protect him from falling right in his course. Okay, so now they bring another story also. David, shalom. Erev Tov. Alright, so now they bring a story now about Rav Huna. Telling stories now about the great tzaddikim, great rabbis who are great tzaddikim. Okay? So now the story is about Rav Huna. Rav Huna habaleyahu chamra. Rav Huna happened to have wine. Bahu besa ra'ya. In you know, in a house which also was decrepit, it was ready to fall down. Okay? Uvoy lapnuye. And he wanted to remove, literally to empty out, in other words, he wanted to remove the wine from this house because obviously he was afraid that it might collapse and you know, and ruin the all the casks of wine that he had. So Ayale L'Rav Ada Bar Ahava, so lo and behold, who did he import? He imported Rav Ada Bar Ahava, the Hossam, you know, there. And Moshe Bishmato Adifanya. And he kept him busy discussing Torah, right, until it became until they were able to empty out the cask of wine. Obviously, yes, other people to do it, but you know, while they were busy talking Torah and so on and so forth, so he felt. But so the Nofak, as soon as he left the house, so Nofal Beso, so the house fell down. But that's not the end of the story yet. So Irgish Rav Ada Bar Ava Ikpat. So Rav Ada Bar Ava was disturbed. Irgish, literally today in Hebrew, means, you know, that he felt something, okay. But in this case, obviously, what it meant is that he was disturbed about this whole business. Mm. And Ikpat, which means he became angry. So Valo, and because he had the opinion, Ki Hod Omer Rav Yanai, the same as Rabbi Yanai, who said, "Le'olam al yamid adam im mekom sakonah." Now, a person should never put himself in a place where there is danger. The Yomar and say, "I can endanger my life." Why? Because oisin li nes, the miracle will be performed for me. Shemay oisin li nes, because maybe the miracle will not be performed for you. I mean, what kind of a knocker are you? You know, that you're tempting the Rebbeinu Shalom. That you know, you say that I don't care. The Rebbeinu Shalom perform a miracle for me, so you're not allowed to endanger your life. Okay, you're not allowed to. You have to take precautions. You have to be sensible about these things. V'yim tim seloimar, and if you wish to say that oisin loynes minakin loy misu yosef. Another reason why you should not rely upon miracles is because, okay, let's say taka that a miracle is performed for him. But you know what the result is going to be? The result is that they're going to give him demerits. They're going to remove, they're going to take away some of the merits that he had over there. Deducted, okay. Deducted. Right, deduct the merits. Amar Rav Chanan, so Rav Chanan said, my craw, what is a pasuk that teaches us this? He says, Dichsev, this is the pasuk, which says, what? Kotainti de kol achatzodim kol ho'emes. Okay. Now, of course, in the original, we know who said "Katonti Mikol Chasodim Mikol Emes." This is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu says to Rebbeinu Shelolam, "I don't deserve Katonti. Literally, I'm too small, okay, to deserve all the kindness and the truth, you know, that you have performed for me." Okay. He was being very, very modest in his prayers to Rebbeinu Shelolam because he knew that Esau was there, you know, in the distance over there, the other side of the Jordan, you know. So,
being humble,
right, right. But how does he touch here in order to make it, you know, conform to the teaching that he's giving? So the answer is katonti. You have to understand the sense that I've become less. In other words, my merits have, you know, have become diminished, you know, that I have performed from all the chasod, because of all the chasod and because of all the emes. In other words, because all of the miracles, all the favors that Rabbeinu Shel Olam has performed for me, means that I'm not going to have so much credit, you know, when it comes to the life in the world to come. Mm-hmm. So it's another way to teach the fact that we shouldn't tempt Rabbeinu Shel Olam by putting ourselves in such a condition, you know, that we say, okay, I can take a chance because
don't go sessions on the tape.
Don't rely on miracles in this case, right? Okay. Now the question is, my haba uvde the rabbeinu barahava. So tell me, what was the deed, or what were the deeds of Rabbeinu the Ava? You know, that in other words, that in his chus, that in his merit, so many good things could come to pass. I mean, that the houses wouldn't fall. What was his special merit? So it says kahode itmar. So the answer is, it's based upon a statement that we learned in the Gemara, which says shoalu talmidav l'avoda barahavo. His students asked for l'avoda barahavo. They said to him, "Bameh erachta yomim? Tell me, what is the secret of your long life? How come you've lived so many years?" So Amar lahem, so he said to them, "Mi yomai lo ikpadati b'sof beisi. As long as I have been living, I never became angry in my home. In other words, I never said an angry word in my home. V'lo tza'adati b'fnei misha godol mimeni. Nor, when I was walking, did I ever walk in front of someone who was more important than I." In other words, humility dictates that he walks behind and not in front. Okay? V'lo hirharti b'mvoz habtunofos. Nor did I ever think words of Torah in alleyways which were full of refuse or garbage or something like that. In other words, you know, when I would come to such a place, I would immediately cease thinking Torah in order not to, bring disgrace or something like that. Because we have to have pure thoughts, and this place was not a place of purity. Okay? Below halachti dalet amos, below toil lo tefillin. Nor did I ever walk 4 amos, in other words, 4 cubits, or approximately 6 feet. I never walked the 6 feet. I never walked 6 feet without either Torah, in other words, thoughts of Torah, as we said, or without tefillin on my head. He always wore tefillin. And he says, below yashanti beves hamidrash, lo shenas keva, below shenas harai. Nor did I ever sleep in the base medrash, either a fixed sleep, in other words, you know, the regular sleep that you have at night, nor even just a temporary sleep. In other words, in the base of medrash, he would never shut his eyes, he would never chap a drimmel, as we would say, but instead he devoted his entire time to words of Torah.
Is this wearing tefillin or? Some people I hear wear their tefillin all day long.
Yeah, and it was that the old Rosh Yeshivas, many of them would keep tefillin on their head from the morning until night. And of course, this is in line with what we learned in the Gemara in Brachas, where they speak about the fact that if you go to the bathroom, you know, what do you do with your tefillin? Naturally, you have to take them off, and where do you keep them? You know, when you go to a privy, after all, they had their toilets outside, not inside, you know. So we learned, you know, you keep it in like a crack in the wall or something, but, you know, keep it covered, right, exactly, where, you know, it will not be lost, nor at the same time, you know, you're acting respectfully to them. And what else? Not only all these things that we already mentioned, but he also says, "V'lo sasti b'takolas chaveri," nor did I ever rejoice when I saw my fellow man stumbling, disgraced, or stumbling if you wish, right? And the lokorosi lachaveri b'hachinaso. nor did I ever call my friend by his nickname, the Amri Lo Bachani Chosoy. And others say, nor did I ever call him by his surname. This is the way they translate it, however, because it's a little bit doubtful as to exactly it, so we'll take a look at Rashi. Okay?
What is the nickname in Hebrew? Kanut?
No, Kinui.
Kinui.
Kinui, right. Yeah. But this is Aramaic. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at that. Okay. Okay. Menachem and Matam. So the whole heart, well, all locked with the Torah, that, you know, he says, I never went without Torah. He says, the whole Shata, Havagoris, all hour long, in other words, all the time, he was always thinking Torah, always, you know, thoughts of Torah. Now, Baha Chinoso, right, says, Shemchan and Lo B'nei Adam, that people call him Kigon Shem Levi, as, for example, a nickname, okay? Or chanichaso, he says, kemo chanichas ovos begitten. As we say, let's say a family name in Gitten, ad yudoris, for and so on. All right. Now, it's made clearer over here in the Tosfos. So let's take a look at the Tosfos. Okay?
Where were you in
the
Rashi? I didn't see them here.
Up there, right. Oh, okay. See. So let's take a look at Tosfos, because Tosfos is clearer over here. Okay?
Oh, I see.
Okay.
All right, says Zachinoso, right, yeah. The first word that we had, he says, right. Perish Bikinui, you know, that's the word that you were asking about,
right?
The nickname, Shemachaninoi say Ben Odom Lignai. In other words, that people call him in order, you know, to look down upon him, to, you know,
nickname is the
not respectfully,
yeah, not
right?
Respectful, yeah.
Yeah, hey, Red, short, right, right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, fatso, you know.
Four eyes.
So, now, Vachadi Choso, the next word, right? The one with the ches, he says, Perish Kinui, he says, Shem Mishpachto, that's the family name. Shem Livui, Kamo, Shem Chanichas, always begin. Adasoradur. So they quote the same thing, you know, the Gemara and Gittin. That the till 10 generations, the nickname, or the surname rather, the family name, you know, endures. But he gives an example. He says, Kigon, Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra. Take the case of Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra. Shekol b'nei mishpachto, all the people in his family, hoyunikroim kach, they were all called Ibn Ezra. You understand? Because this, if you remember, in the time of Rashi, in the time of Tosfos, and even up to fairly modern times, right, many Jews did not have surnames, exactly. It's already started, you know, when Jews mixed more in Western European society, and so on, became more necessary.
To take that.
Yeah. The Dapka Lignai, now, it says, Dapka, it's only when you're looking down, you know, you're calling him by the name in order to, you know, to show your contempt for him, right? Avol l'shevach mutar. But if you want to call him something in order to praise him, then that Tosfos says is permissible. Yeah.
This is a little aside. I don't want to be wasters.
Yeah.
But I have a question about the surnames.
Yes.
You know, it just struck me. I mean, I'm familiar with the edict of the Emperor of Austria about the 17th
century. Yeah, right,
century.
Right.
But
yes.
How then did the
I think it was Joseph II or something like that. Yeah.
How did the Sephardim then come to family names?
The answer is that among them, since they were living, let's say, in Spain, where people already had family names.
Oh, yeah.
So as a result of that, undoubtedly, they decided also to adopt family names. Now, of course, family names could be based on various things. And very often it was based, let's say, upon the place where they lived.
The language.
And it happened in Germany, too. You know, people did that, and it happened in Russia, too. The people called the family name from where they lived. Right. So that, for example, if you see a name like Toledano,
sure, of course.
So, of course, you recognize the name, Toledo over there, right. Or if you say a name like, let's say a hamburger or something like that, sure. A Hamburg, you know.
Professor.
Right. Or whatever it may be. So, you know, for example.
Berliner.
Yeah. Manfred Halberstadt. I mean, Halberstadt was also a community, you know, in Germany and so on. Or, you know, in Russia, I don't have to tell you how many Russian Jews, you know, took names after the place in which they came. So, the result is, you know, that it became the accepted practice to do it. But, as you can see, the fact that he quotes, you know, Abraham Ibn Ezra, the fact that his family, they all called themselves Ibn Ezra, you know, right. They use it as a family name, exactly. You don't find Maimonides that. He didn't call himself, my name is Maimonides. He was simply Moshe ben Maimon, that's all.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, to get back
that's
over here. All right. So, this, as we see, are some fine things about Ado Bar Ahavod. He was a great tzaddik. And I think that we can learn many of the qualities that he says about himself to apply to us. It's not good to get angry in your own home. Unfortunately, there are times when you know, we lose our temper or whatever it may be, but you have to learn how to control your temper. And
rejoice in the stumbling of my fellow.
Exactly.
The original point was how has he lived that long?
Right.
So he questions, so it's part of a pattern of the person.
Exactly, all these good qualities.
The composure, peace of mind,
right.
No angry, so forth.
Right. But the point that he's trying to make is, I mean, it doesn't spell it out, but what he says, you know, that the implication is that all these produce the merit within him, you know, to be able to live a long life. But you're right, I mean, whichever way you want to take it. All right. So now, since they're talking about a great tzaddik, so they talk about another one. All right. Omalei Rova. So Rova said to Lerafrom Bapop. He said, "Leimalon Mar, tell us please, mehani mi ma'al yisor habov Rafrom. Tell us about some of the great things, the good things that Rafrom used to do." So Omalei. So he said unto him. He says, "I don't remember anything outstanding about the days of his youth, you know, when he was young, but when he became older, I remember, and I'll tell you something now." He says, "Every time when it was a cloudy day, they would take him out, literally, in other words, they would carry him out on a golden, what do you call it? It's like a sedan seat or something like right. And he would go traveling throughout the entire town. And every wall that was, you know, in a state of crumbling, as we said, so havasosala. D-I-A. Yeah, but it's not a dais. No.
Dais being like a stage.
Yeah, dais is a pulpit. It's a raised stage, that's what it is. Yeah, okay. But I use the word a sedan chair because that they used to have. As a matter of fact, the modern sedans, the cars originally were based upon the fact that, you know, people would carry them and then afterwards they became developed into carriages, you know. And eventually they became cars. But originally it was something that, you know, you had carriers who would carry you. So he would go around and every wall that he saw that was crumbling, he would knock it down. Well, he was a very important man. Rav Huna happened to be a very wealthy man, that's why he could afford to go on a golden chair, okay? But also, obviously, he was a man with a great deal of authority in his town, so that if he would see that a wall was crumbling, he didn't want to take a chance on, you know, the house coming down, and so he ordered it knocked down. So they knocked it down. So the Gemara continues and says, "E efshar lemoro bonila." If the owner of this particular wall or this dwelling, if you wish, right, had the means, then in that case he would build it. In other words, he would build it at his own expense. The E lo efshar, but let's say the owner of this place did not have the means to repair it. So boni lo ihu medide, then Rav Huna would actually build it at his own expense. So this is one thing that he did, that he wanted to make sure that there would be no mapolis, no tragedies occurring because of crumbling walls, and it made no difference whether it was a Jew or a Goy. It's another thing. Okay, made no difference. He was interested, you know, he was a good civic minded person, and so he. And now another thing that he did, Hopanya de Malay Shabbato, and every Shabbos, Erev Shabbos in the afternoon, in other words, every Friday afternoon, Hava Mishadir Shalucha Leshuka. He would send a servant of his to the market, the Chol Yarka, the Hava Fayish Lehu, Leginai Zovinle, and whatever vegetables was still left over to the Ginai. Ginai, these are the people, you know, the farmers, let's say, would bring the produce into the town and they would sell them. So we could say, let's say, you know, the people who ran the vegetable markets, the vegetable stalls, right? So if there was fruit or vegetables left over, he would buy it, and let's take a look what he did with it. Vishadi Lelinara, and he would throw it into the river. So now the Gemara asks a very logical question and says, why didn't he give it to the poor people? Mm-hmm. I mean, you quote this as being such a great great source of great deed, a noble deed. Why didn't he give it to the poor people? So the Gemara answers, Zimnin the Samcha Datayhu Vilayosul Mizben. There are times, you know, if they expected that, you know, there would always be fruit, vegetables left over, so they wouldn't take the trouble to buy it. They would rely, that's what Samchat Daitaita means, that they rely upon the fact that though Osama and Isman, they wouldn't do any shopping of fruits and vegetables. They were waiting for the handout, you know. So therefore, this he didn't want to encourage in them. He wanted them, you know, to be in the habit of not relying upon that they were going to be fruits and vegetables left over, but they should buy enough, you know, for their needs for Shabbos. That's what he wants. Well, they destroy the behemoths, and now they ask another question. So, okay. Yeah, give it to the behemoths, right?
What if the poor person didn't have money to buy?
Well, that's a really different question.
Then they have to.
I mean, you know that there were different things in order to help poor people survive. The Mishnah Peo has a whole series of these things, you know. You had what they call, for example, the Tamchui, and the Tamchui is that everybody would throw food, let's say, into a common pot, which went around, and so on. Then, you know, the poor people didn't have, you know, they could take and have food from it. It's sort of like, you know, the kitchen idea that you have today.
Isn't there a point also that do not give your brother charity, give him a job.
Correct. This is, of course, the point that what the Torah says, you know, Kiyomu Chachicha Bechazakdabo. In other words, if your brother becomes low, then you have to support him, you have to strengthen him. And as, you know, the Rambam says in the Shmona Brachim, you know, he says that the highest form of charity is to enable a person to become self-supporting.
Can you say
Hebrew
again if your brother is
low? Yeah. It's in Parsha Bahar, towards the end of the Sefer Vayikra. Literally, you have to strengthen them. You have to give them support. Okay.
It's a weakness of our charitable system.
Right.
To give people the money where they stop helping themselves, you know, it perpetuates not to do that.
Right, right. I mean, there are people who feel that it's kupt, you know, it's kupt. That's all. They're entitled to it, but they do nothing, you know, in order to try to get off of wealth or relief.
Or they expect that they can write a letter from Europe to the United States, I need a new fur coat.
Well,
and you send them the fur coat because they're poor, but then later on you find out that they know how to write letters, that they're well off. You know, this is
all right, that happened. Look, yeah, right. There are some people like that.
Sure.
No question. Yeah. All right, so how about feeding this to the animals then, you know, the surplus? So he says, Kosovar, he is of the opinion that that food which should be eaten by human beings should not be wasted on animals. Okay? Shouldn't feed it. In other words, animals have their food and human beings have their food.
Means don't feed your dog from your table.
Right. Because in his opinion, it shall we say, like, it denigrates the status of the food itself. I mean, here, when we eat food, we are grateful to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We make a bracha before, we make a bracha afterwards. So it's as if we are sort of like sanctifying the food that we eat, because we know that it is necessary for our human survival, and we're grateful to God, you know, that we have. Okay? Now, if you give it to the beast doesn't know how to say thank you. And besides, the Ribbono Shel Olam created other foods for the animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a very difficult point to understand all that explanation.
Yeah.
Really.
Right.
Say, the man throws in the river.
Yeah.
Why not for the animals?
Right, right,
in the river.
Exactly.
It would be very difficult. All right.
Sure. But this is why I said, you know, this is why you have to try to consider what was he thinking when, and this is the way it's, this is my interpretation of it.
Also, it's agadah, yeah. It's not halacha.
Yeah, this is true.
We have to understand
that's
it.
Right.
We don't have to follow it.
Yeah.
Now we see how it evolves. Okay.
All right, so they ask the next question.
Velol
is b'nei klal. Let him not buy it at all. Why did he buy it up? Right? So let him not buy it. So he says, Nim says, makshid unless it love. So the answer is because if they became dependent upon handing, you know, free food all the time, then in that case, it means that you'll be making things worse as far as the future is concerned, both for the buyers and also for the sellers of the food, because the sellers of the food will figure, why should I bring so much food when I know I'm going to have to throw away some of it? So they'll bring less food, and the result will be that there won't be enough food in order to go around. So in order to discourage that, that's why he would rather that be plenty of food, even if it meant
throwing
the discarding into the surface.
You know, you say his reasoning is sound. I really don't,
you don't agree on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so. I think it's specious.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
For example, I don't want to take up everybody's time. Maybe we should go on.
It's all right, David, go ahead.
All right. Well, the last example.
We have freedom of expression over here.
the last example.
Yeah.
I mean, how does it differ to the seller that the food will be taken and thrown in the river, or it'll be given away? What is the difference to him? If he knows,
yeah, he may feel that he doesn't want to bring enough. You know, why should I bother to bring all this? Go schlep it to the market, and then to see it being thrown into the river.
Well,
it bothers him.
Yeah.
So he'll bring less food the next time. And it may be that there isn't enough.
Control surplus.
Right. It's like, for example, some mornings when we come to shul over here, there are more than enough rolls for everybody. But there are some mornings when all of a sudden, you know, we have a lot of people come to daven, a lot of people go to the breakfast table, there may not be enough rolls to go around.
Yeah. Well, but the original idea was that if the shopkeeper or whoever thought that the food would be given to the poor people, I assume for nothing, but you know,
yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Then why should he bother to bring it? Because he's not making a profit on it, and it costs some labor and expense to bring it, so he'll bring less.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Now, if that same shopkeeper knows that the food that he brings also will not be, except this man is buying it, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
He's buying it.
They can bring more foods because he buys it.
I understand. Right. So by his buying it, it assures the supply of food.
Correct.
Yeah. All he's trying to do is prevent the poor people from depending on the.
So he's giving a subsidy to all the vendors to make sure that
welfare.
Well, he's also making sure that Anderson, there's a steady supply. All right. Okay.
Yeah. We can take a look at the Rashi over here and see. Rashi more or less says, what I've been saying. Some of us said, "Well, Shekivanti." The Rashi. Thank God that Rashi and I are thinking along the same lines.
What's the expression, David?
All right, let's take a look at the Rashi. Okay.
Have you the bottom?
No, it's Zovinle. Do you see it over there? Yeah. Zovinle. That's approximately a little just below the halfway line.
Zovinle
v'shadele b'daro. Right? He would buy it up and throw it into the river, right? So he says, the hochi, for this reason, zavin lagu, he bought it. The hava mishtayer midi leganonin, because if anything had been left over for, the vegetable sellers, right? Then azlo le'ibud, it would go to waste. The Mechmasho b'Shabbos, right? And, when would it happen? It would go to waste on Shabbos itself. The Nimtzamach Shilon le'osid lovei. And the result that he would cause them in the future, to bring less. The lo ma'isa yarka, they would not bring enough vegetables to sit with the Shabbos for the Shabbos meal. In other words, they see that it's going to waste, so they wouldn't bother to bring them much. And as far as the poor people, the poor were figuring that this, they were going to be getting these vegetables. And they would say, we don't have to buy anything. It's going to be, we'll get it free. Okay? But the possibility may be that there won't be any leftovers. And they wouldn't have what to eat on Shabbos. All right, so that's the reason why he did what he did, in order, to make sure that they would not become so dependent upon, the free food that, they would make the effort in order to provide food for themselves, for Shabbos. Now, the other part about, feeding the animals, in Machil Noisim Lahim, he says, Mishom Bizui Oichen, he says, because this is considered, taking a derogatory view of food. And the result is that, he would give the appearance that he was literally kicking, in other words, he was rejecting the goodness that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam had showered upon the world. Inami, another possibility, Mishum Dechosa Torah Al-Mamonu Shel Yisrael. Because the Torah is interested that it wants to save money for the Jewish people, doesn't want them to waste money. The Zorak l'Nahor, right? And he would throw them into the river. The Holchim l'Mokim Acher, and the river would carry away these things. And then people would find it someplace else, right? The Yochin Osan, and they would eat it. Kach Shemati, I heard this too, says Rashi. In other words, one of his rebbeim and somebody told him that this might be the reason.
That's
okay?
What makes sense, because there are a number of things here. First, the business about the animals. It isn't so much that the food is being humiliated, you're humiliating people by saying, look, if I take this food, and I could give it to you, but I'm not going to give it to you. Instead, I'm going to give it to this goat or this cow. How does this make the man feel?
Right.
I'm no better than a goat or a cow, the food that you give to me.
Yeah.
The second thing is what he is doing, in effect, he's acting like a government. He's subsidizing the vendors. Not only is he subsidizing the vendors, he's subsidizing the farmers.
That's right.
But
absolutely.
But since this man apparently is a very wise man and a leader, it doesn't make sense to waste the food. So what he's doing is he knows that the river, the current, will bring the food to the poor people at a certain spot. And he'll put it there. They're not humiliated by receiving the
correct
food, but they do receive the food that they need.
Right. It's a gift, so to speak.
See,
yeah.
Interesting.
This is Rashi's interpretation.
Yeah. Rashi,
you know,
says that. Right. I mean,
what did you just say?
No, this is what Rashi said, you know, about...
Ishkalti al Rashi.
Boroshakivanti, Lidato shel Rashi.
Boroshakivanti.
Right. Yeah.
I still think this is a strong point. You see that you added to it before, that if people get something for nothing, then you are not helping society there. It's a very important point, I think, because people who can afford it will know how to manipulate and come over and get the food for nothing. And he wants them to not to be in that situation, come and pay and do it properly.
Yeah.
Well, except
we have people today.
Our society today is,
you know, it's
many
the same
freeloaders.
If you want to give the analogy of eating, because we don't question who comes to the table.
Right.
But if there's a person who can afford his social share, mm-hmm. but he don't do it.
Right.
Because he knows it's over there for free.
Yeah.
And he'll go. And so the same situation.
What if that person, to use your analogy, had to walk not at the table, but had to walk to the very, very farthest end of the shul to get his roll, right? Which you say is for free. It isn't such an easy thing anymore. He has to do something.
That's why I fetch, because now the guy can say, "Hey, but come here, wait on me."
No. But this isn't.
Bring it to me.
Excuse me, but this isn't what happened here. This isn't what happened. If there was somebody who wanted, first, that person didn't go without food, all right? But he had to walk from the marketplace to the river, who knows how far, and he had to go into the river to pull out the food, right? Dry it off, put it down his back, and bring it home. You know,
at least you made him work for that effort. You didn't give it to him.
Well,
so
that may be his idea. He's trying to balance what he's doing.
Yeah.
Be sure there's only four people pulling the water, pulling it out.
There could
be anybody pulling it out.
Yes, that's correct. I understand that. That's the risk you
have
to take.
The government has trucks full of free cheese, free butter, free.
The important thing is that the food isn't wasted.
That's
important.
That's what I think.
But the people come, then they're not poor.
In many cases, they're not.
They
agree with you.
Because they don't want to get it for nothing.
I agree with you, but there are risks for everything. I mean, there's abuse. And there's fraud, but and no question about it. But if you can't deny somebody that's poor the right to have food stamps, because, and I'll tell you this as a story, when I was in law school, there was a fellow who came from a middle-class family in New Jersey, and the system was run so poorly that, as you know, Columbia is unbelievable poverty, and there are plenty of thousands of people who need these food stamps. But this middle class boy, who was a law student, who was living in a dormitory his parents paid for, went down and got food stamps. No, he just, they didn't check. He just didn't. So, so there's absolute abuse and fraud. But what were you going to do? Stop the whole thing?
No, I think you're agreeing in a sense. You're agreeing with why he doesn't want to have the surplus and is dumping it in the river. To create the situation where the person
would not be dependent upon
or take advantage of the situation by not providing properly for himself.
Right.
Well, except that, again, if there was somebody that
wanted
to go to the river and pull out the food instead of paying for it, he could do so. It's true.
Yeah, true. But
he had to do it.
There are other laws,
there
are other arrangements made, for poor people that, to provide them with food. For Shabbos, for the weekday, and so on. All right. Again, right there. And when it came sometimes, let's say, that people were sick and he wanted to provide with medicine, so Havimole Kuza de Mayo, he would fill a vase with water, the Tali lay Besefo de Vesa, and he would put it at the entrance of the house. The Yomar, and he would say it, called the boy Lesi Velishko, whoever wants can come and take from the water. Different questions. I mean, why he did this? Maybe that, let's say, he had a pure water supply, and other people didn't have, so we invited them to come and do it. Another possibility is that he was inviting them to come and to wash their hands or something like that. See, in order for the sake of sanitation, hygiene. Yeah. We'll take a look. We'll see in a second. The Yiko the Amre, and there are those who say is Milsa the Shifter. Abigomim, that he also was learning. In other words, he was applying this in the case of Shifta. The question is, what is Shifta? So the difference of opinion about Shifta is, one opinion about Shifta is the fact that it's the name of a certain disease. And again, in order to make sure, that the disease didn't spread, so he would provide the water for people for sanitation and, in good health. That's one expression. But Rashi again has another interpretation. It says, Milsa the Shifta, if you take a look, the last Rashi on the page, it goes over about 8 lines or so. It says, Minhag Shadim Shemazikim. It says, there were Shadim, these were like little devils, right? Evil spirits.
Demons,
right, okay, that do harm. Lemi sheyochal the einu notel yodav, for a person who eats and doesn't wash his hands, the shifta kahach. This is what shifta is like. Garsin maseches Yuma, as we learn in the Gemara in Yuma over there, where it says Omar Abaye says mishum shifta. There he's talking about the fact that if a person is suffering from shifta, then on Yom Kippur he's permitted to take a little bit of water or something like that. Of course, this is one of the medical conditions that are discussed in the Gemara in Yuma, where a person is permitted to break the fast for the sake of, because he's in a dangerous condition or something like that. So that's one interpretation according to Rashi. And he would hang this little vase of water or pitcher of water, so that people wash their hands. Okay. Now, the Hava Manach Kuzo de Mayo, right? Vidolile. And he also, in general, he would place a pitcher of water, and he would raise it up. The Omar, of course, when would he raise this water? This is when he was ready to eat. In other words, what we would call the Tilas Yadayim, the Yomar, he would say, call the Tzrich, Leisa V'Leil, the Lola Histakin. Whoever is needy, let him come, let him enter, in order not to become dangerous. So, of course, we see from here already, the parallel to what we say in the Pesach HaGodot Seder service, where we say, called Ditzrich Yesev Yivsach, right? Whoever is needy, let him come and celebrate Pesach HaGodot Seder. Right. Kehavakarach Rifto, and here we have it. And when he would literally wrap a sandwich, because in those days what they would do very often is to make a sandwich. I mean, we think a sandwich is a modern interpretation, but back in the days of the Gemara, they already made sandwiches too. That they would take bread and wrap it around, something in the inside. So, in other words, it was ready to eat, make a mochi. So, Hava Posach Nidavove, he would open up the gates or the doors of his house. When your mom would say, "Call mom, it's Zorach Leisa Velecho." Whoever is needy, let him come and let him eat. Omar Rava, so Rava said, "Kulhu." Matsino Mikhaima, he says, I was able to do all these same things, Levar Mahor, except for this last thing. Delo Matsino Lameeva. This I was not able to do. In other words, to say, whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Why? Mishum de Nefishi b'nei chelo de Mekuza. Because there are so many, literally, soldiers in Mechuzah who are hungry, and therefore I can't begin to open up my house to every person who is hungry in Mechuzah. Whereas Rav Huna was able to do it because, as we saw, he was a wealthy man, and he had the wherewithal to share his food with whoever it was, invite them to come and eat. Now, what is this B'nai Chela? B'nai Chela means soldiers. But as we see, take a look at the first Rashi on the page. It says, Meshim Nefishim B'nai Chela, because there are many in Mechuzah. He says, the Ikon Niyetve, there are many, many poor people. They're called Michli Karna. And the amount of money that he has available will immediately run out. So he can't do it. Okay. So, in other words, according to Rashi, the B'nai Chela is talking about the soldiers. It doesn't mean soldiers, it means like there's a whole army of poor people in Mechuzah. Others say, however, that the target means soldiers. And if it means soldiers, it's because these soldiers, when they see that the Nimvites were put out, so they'll come and they'll all come in over there, and he'll run out of food, he won't be able to take care of them either. Because soldiers had a tendency, that they would grab food wherever they possibly could. And so that this is the meaning of it. All right? Now we will learn another story. This is about Ilpa Rabbi Yochanan, okay? Havagarsi Viraisa. They were studying Torah. Dechika dehu milsa tuva. And things became very tough for them. Of course, when I say very tough, I mean, as Rashi says, that they became very poor. Anius. So, let's go and we'll become businessmen, okay? Unekayim ben apshin. And we will be able to fulfill for ourselves Efeskeli Ebecha Evyon. Pasuk that says, indeed, there will not be any poor person in your midst. So Avlu, Ozlu, so they went, and Usve to Sigudor Aya. And what did they do? They sat down underneath a wall which was, in not good condition. Okay? It's a crumbling wall. Havakar Karchi Rifter, and they were eating their lunch. Also Tre Malochi Ashores, so two Malochim, two angels came. Shomei Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan heard the Omar Chad L'Chabrei, that one of them said to the other, that is, one angel said to the other, Nishte Alayhu Haiguda, let's throw this wall down upon them, B'nakta Binhu, and let's kill them. Why? Shemanichin Chayi Olam Habo, because they are deserting the life of the world to come, V'yoskim B'chayisho, and they're dealing, in order to engage in life which is only temporary. So Amalei Yidach. So the other one said to him, No, noch nicht. Shavik nuhu de ikah behu chad de kaimalei shata. No, let's leave them alone because among them there is one, in other words, one of these two, whose time has come for good fortune. Rabbi Yochanan Shoma. Rabbi Yochanan heard, and Ilfa lay shama, but Ilfa did not hear what the angel was saying. Okay?
Who was Ilfa?
He was another sage. Yeah. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Ilfa. So Rabbi Yochanan said to Ilfa, he says, Shama mar mide, did you hear anything? Amalei, so he said to him, lo. Omar. So he said, inasmuch as I heard what the Malachim said, right, and Ilfa didn't hear, so Shema Mino, from this I deduce the fact that Ludidi Kaim Ali Shata, that I am the one, who's going to rise to prominence. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, to Ilfa, he said, Ihader, V'uki ben Avshei, ki lo yachdal evyam mekerev haaretz. I am going to return and apply to myself that, in other words, the poor person will not cease from the midst of the earth. There are two contradictory psukim in the same chapter in Sefer Devarim. One of them says, true, there will not be any Evyon, right? And then the pasuk says, but nevertheless, the poor will not cease from the midst of the earth. So, the original proposition was to go and to do business so that, they could say that lo yevecha evyon. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is resigned to the fact that will go back and study Torah, even if it means what? That the poor will not cease from the midst of the earth, meaning himself. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan Hodar. So Rabbi Yochanan went back to the yeshiva, of course, and Ilfa lay Hodar. Ilfa did not. Ada also Ilfa, Molech Rabbi Yochanan. So until the time that Ilfa finally came back, you know, to the place where the yeshiva was, Rabbi Yochanan was like the melech. In other words, he was the king of the yeshiva. He was the head of the yeshiva. So Omru lo, so they said to him, I osir mar vigorously have a molech. In other words, they said to Ilfa, you know, if you had returned and studied, then he would not have been the king. In other words, they're saying to him, you know, that, you know, you could have been the greatest scholar even than Rabbi Yochanan. You could have been the head of the yeshiva if you had only, you know, come back to learn. So Mar Ozal and Tola Navshe Biskaria the Sfinta. So as a result, what did Ilfa do? He went and literally he hung himself. It doesn't mean he hung himself. It means that he hung by his hands, you know, from the mast of a ship. Omar, and he said, Iiko de Sholim Masnisa, the Rabbi Chiyav, Rabbi Yeshaya, Velo Bishat Nalei, Masnisa. He says, is there anyone who can challenge me? Ask me a Shaila, ask me any question about the Mishnah of Rabbi Chiyav and Rabbi Yeshaya. By the way, what was the role of Rabbi Chiyav and Rabbi Yeshaya? They were Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, and they were among those who helped to edit the text of the Mishnah. Okay? So he says, is there anyone here? I challenge anyone to ask me any question about, you know, the teachings of Rabbi Chi and Rabbi Yeshaya, below Peshat, that I can't explain, you know, from the Mishnah. So, Nafilna, below Peshat, if I can't answer from the Mishnah, then Nafilna mi iskara disfinto betavana. Then I'll drop from the mast of the ship and I will drown. So also Husaba, so an older man came along, an older scholar, Antonolei, and he said to him, look, it's written, Ho'emer tenu shekel livnai b'shabbos, if a man says, I want you to give a shekel to my sons every week. Here, b'shabbos doesn't mean you pay him on Shabbos. But it means that every week you give him a shekel to live on. Out of what? Out of my estate, is the understanding. Okay? But they deserve to have not one shekel, but to have a sela. A sela is like 100 shekelim, okay? So, in other words, they deserve to get more. Why? As Rashi explains, because they have large families, and, you know, they need more for their support. So, nosin lahem sela. Then what is the din? The din is that they give them the sela. The imamar, but if the father said, "Al titnu lahem elo shekel," that you have to give them nothing but a shekel, in other words, only a shekel, then einostim lahem elo shekel, then they receive nothing. So, in other words, it depends upon the wording of what the father says. If he simply says, "Give my children, okay, a shekel every week," then if the families are large, they can even have a sela, okay. But if he says, give them only a shekel, then that's all that they get. Okay? What? All right, 2 shekels equals. Anyway, it's obvious, I mean, that it's more. Okay? Now, Im Omar, what if he says, Mesum, if they die, Yershu Acherim Tachtehim, then others are to inherit, you know, my estate instead of them. So Ben Shomar Tenu, Ben Shomar Tenu, whether he said give or don't give, ain't no sin him on the shekel, then they give only a shekel. The idea behind over here is that the father apparently is concerned that others should share in the estate. Why didn't he give the entire estate to the sons? That's already a different story. Obviously he was disappointed in his children, and so he wanted somebody else to get the estate. So the Gemara says, Omale. So he said to him, in other words, this Soba, you know, this old man said to Ilfa, he said to him, Homani, tell me, who is the author of this Mishnah? So he answered him, he says, Rabbi Meir here. It's Rabbi Meir. The Omar, who says that mitzvah dekayim divrei ha'meis. It's a mitzvah, he says, to fulfill the words of a dying man. Person dies, and he leaves over a will, he gives instructions, and so on. It's a mitzvah to carry out what he says. So, obviously, what was the instruction of the father? The instruction of the father seemed to be, in other words, that somebody else should have it. All right, so we'll take a look over here at the Rashi, and we'll call it quits for tonight. No, I told him I should be Iskario, Klima Eitz Aroch, Tako, Belev Sunni, explains in what is the word Iskario, which means a mast, as we said, Shemanechen Olecha, Michse, you put the sail goes over here, and it gives you the French word Vilon. Well, in French today it's voile, okay, not Mela. The Shorli, it says, ask me anything, even though Ilfa is saying, look, I was engaged in business, but nevertheless, I know more than he does. I know more than Rabbi Yochanan, even though I was engaged in business. So, Rashi explains to Bei Rabbi Chiyo, to Bei Rabbi Yeshay, he says, "Now, Misadre Mas Nisa Apir Rabbeinu HaKodesh," that they were the ones who, arranged the text of the Mishnah according to the instructions of Rabbi Shoya Rabbam, who was their teacher. Okay, so he says, okay. Right? Give a shekel to my sons. Misha Meis, a person died. The Niach Mimoni Biyadish Neemon, and he left his money over, as he charged a person in whom he had confidence to take care of the estate. Okay? Like an executor. Alright? The Omar, and he said, Tenu shekel chatzi sela levnei, lohitzoa vishwa, give a shekel which is the worth of half a seller. All right, this is the source of that, okay?
Yeah.
In other words, a shekel is half a seller, or a seller is the two shekelim, okay? To my son, for expenses every week, but they should have more, sheyesh lahem bonim harbe, they have many children, and they cannot get along for the week for less than a seller, then less than a seller, right? So the din is that they give. The Hava Bedate, the loyal Limitin Lahem, because of the father had in mind not to give them more than what? More than a shekel, right? The Ela Shekel, then in that case, Hoya Mitzavah, he would command, Al Titnu Lahem Ela Shekel, right? Give them only a shekel. The Haida Komatu Lahem Shekel, but when he says simply give them a shekel, Layomat Tenu Sela, and he didn't say don't give them a sela, I thought he could have said give them a sela every week, why didn't he say that? Says Meshum Devoil Zuzle, because he wanted to encourage his sons. Kedamrun and Biksuvis, as Gemara says, Biksuvis, it's Kedela Zarzum and Masa Matan. He wants the sons to go out and to earn their living, to go out and engage in the business world. Kedei She Yitruchu Viyumidu Derechetz Viyavichu, because he wants them to learn how to get along in this world and how to make a living, and because, in other words, if they were dependent upon the seller, so they wouldn't be inspired to go out and to do work. This way, by not, by saying give them a shekel, so they have to supplement their income, so they have to learn to go out and to work in order to earn it.
This is something I have a little bit of familiarity with. It's also like with a charitable bequest, or I guess in here this is just a regular bequest, is that what is the intent of the decedent?
Right.
The intent originally with the first example is not to limit the amount of money. The intent is to benefit the son.
Right.
So a judge or executor looking at that would say, if by giving the second shekel you accomplish the benefiting of the child, then you're fulfilling what the father wanted to do in the first place. On the other hand, if the father, for example, does suspect in this case is what is happening, knows that the son is a spendthrift, or sons are spendthrifts, that they're going to, it isn't because that they have large families, they're just going to take the second shekel and waste it on whatever, we can imagine a lot of things. Then he writes in this restrictive clause, and I've written in this restrictive, it's only to be so much, that's it. I mean, not more, I've seen cousins, not more than $1,000 a year. You know, so this is kind of an old one, but I mean, it's only to be so much, and that's his intent, is to restrict the money which he feels will be wasted. And Rashi was a vintner, right? I mean, ours is...
Right.
This is just a small part of
I'll just summarize the rest of the Rashi over here. So Rashi says, you know, exactly the very fact that he restricts them, it says only sell it, means that he feels that maybe others should also inherit this estate.
Yeah, that
he said that, right.
Sure.
All right. So then, you know, Rabbi Meir is the one who says in Ksubis that mitzvah l'chaim divrei hames, right, that it's a mitzvah to fulfill the words of the dying man. The lav mitzvah min adin, because if it were not a mitzvah to fulfill this, then according to the din of the Torah, nosdin lehen kolorei lehen. I mean, the son should get everything. Sharei kolamomen shalehen. Right, that all the money belongs to them. The yain bo leyos nachem klum, and the other party to whom he wants to give money, you know, would have no claim for anything. Ela lacham isosan, except after they die. So in Yesh Mosor, if there happens to be anything left over in their own estate, so maybe that would go. But in Yimlav, there's nothing, lo yitlu. So Metov Sharotzen on the Kaim Devorah, Shiyoshachim Tafdehim on the Kamsin and Samokhan. So in order to make sure that others will also have, you know, something left over from the estate, so therefore we dole out the money, Kedei Sheyehes Sham Mosor, so that there would be something left over for a third party as well. So this is how Rashi explains it.
Yeah. Did you know something? First of all, that's just remember, this is that these sons have a life estate. No one else takes. This is something about the Shemay too. No one else takes while they're alive.
Correct.
It's like there's a third party sharing.
Right.
It's only upon their death that there's another income, what we call an income beneficiary.
Correct.
I suspect the other income beneficiary would be a daughter, not a stranger.
Well, that's not mentioned.
Yeah, I know, it's not mentioned, but this is...
I mean, who the third party would be, I mean...
This would be my guess.
Right. Could be anybody that he
could
wants
be,
to
could
find.
Be, could be.
Could be anybody, you know, a good friend or whatever.
Could be, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll end at this point, and then Yetz Hashem, next week we shall continue with another... So we're at Chof Aleph, Omen Aleph.
And it is October 26, 1994.
So we are now on the third long line that we have.
Okay.
Yeah. The last words that we learned is mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. In other words, it's a mitzvah to fulfill the words of the person who is dying. And you know, and then we did the Rashi on that, which you heard the last minutes of it. All right, so now we continue with another story. Omru alav al Nochum ish Gamzu. They tell the following story about Nochum, the man of Gamzu. There is a place mentioned in Divrei Hayomim called Gimzu. So they say that originally he was Nochum from Gimzu, but as the story that we'll read tonight tells us that everybody says Nochum Gamzu, which means Gamzu, as we say, Gamzu the Tevah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that where it comes from?
That's where it comes from, right.
Literally it means?
This too
is
may
good.
Turn out to be good, right. Right. This too is for good, even though it's
Gamzu the Tevah. Even
right.
though
it may be bad, but nevertheless, it's good.
Good.
Right. You have to
see, it's the third long line.
Long line.
Right. Right. Omer Olav al Nochum ish Gamzu.
Yeah, it's about a third of the way in on the third line.
Third of the way in?
Are you on the right page?
Kapala.
Yeah. Omer Olav al Nochum ish Gamzu.
It's actually the fourth line. The third line.
About
halfway in.
I
thought this was
the
long line.
No. You have the wrong. You got brachas there. You have brachas.
Are we in business?
Yeah.
All right. So, Omro lo al Nochum ish Gamzu. If I tell the following story about Nochum ish Gamzu, the man either who came from Gimzu, as we said, or as more famously he became more famous under the name of Malka Mishkan. So, Shehoya Sumo Vishtayena, he was blind in both eyes. Gidein Mishtayodo, his two hands were cut off. Kiteya Mishtayraglov, his two feet were cut off. The Chol Gufay Molei Shrin, and his entire body was full of, just covered with boils. Why was he such a mess? Well, not only that, but the Gemara continues and says, "V'hoyam mutol b'vayis haruah." He lived in a house that was crumbling. In other words, that it was liable to fall down at any moment. V'raglei mitosei, and the feet of the bed on which he was lying, munochim b'spolim shamayim. They were resting. That is, the feet, you know, were resting in the bed. They use the word seifel in Hebrew to mean a cup. But, you know, in other words, like water containers, okay? The feet were there. Why? Kidei shelo yalu alav nimbolim. In order that the ants should not climb up on him. So, in other words, they would drown in the water and they wouldn't climb on him. And as Rashi points out, if with his two hands cut off,
he couldn't chop himself.
Right, exactly. He couldn't defend himself against the ants. So, this was his protection against the ants. All right. So, Pamachas, and the Gemara continues over there. There's a question as to whether the next few words, as you see, belong in this text or not at this point. All right. Let's say that they do belong. Then what is it saying? It says, which means that his house, after all, it was in a house which was, his bed was in a house which was crumbling. Okay? So, here's the connection to some of the previous stories. Bikshu Talmidov, the funnest mitose, his Talmidim wanted to empty out his bed, in order to take his bed out of the house, because of the fact that it was a house which was crumbling, right? V'yachrei chein, the funnest is a Caleb, and afterwards, to take out the furniture from the house. So Omalahem, so he said to them, Bonai, my sons, Panu is Hakelim, first take out the furniture. V'yachakach, Panu is Mitosi, and then take out my bed. Shemuftach lochem, because you can be assured, Kol Zman Shani Babayis, as long as I am in the house, Ein Abayis no fail. As long as I'm in this house, the house will not fall. Okay? And of course, as I said, this is similar to another story that we had, you know, that he wanted to remove the cask of wine, if you remember,
right,
from a broken down house. So they engaged in Torah discussion while in the meantime they emptied out the cask. Right. So, so Taka, they did exactly what they said, what he told them to do. Pinu es HaKelim, first, they took out all the furniture that was in the house. The Pinus had his mitosi, and then afterwards they took out his bed. The no falabayis, and then the house fell. All right. So, Omruloi Talmidov. So his Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, the chim yachash et tzadik gomurato. Inasmuch as you are an absolute tzadik, Loma also the chokach, so tell me, why did this happen to you? In other words, that here you are covered with
boils
from head to foot, and
your two hands are missing,
your two feet are missing, your eyes are blind. How could such a thing happen to such a tzaddik? So kacham alehem. So this is what so he said to them. So amalehem, he said to them, Bonai, my sons, children. Okay, but actually, so here my sons. Okay. Ani goramti liatzmi. I am the one who caused it to myself. I brought it upon myself. Shepa machas ayisim mahalech baderech leveis chavit. Once upon a time, I happened to be going on the way to the house of my father-in-law. The oyo imi masui gimel chamor, and I had with me a burden of three donkeys, which means that there were three donkeys that I was leading, and each donkey had, you know, was bearing freight, as we would say today. It had burdens on it, okay? Echot shel machol, one of them carried food, The echod shall nishta, another one carried drinks. The echod shall minimigodim, and the third one had all kinds of good things to eat, all kinds of pastries and things like that and so on. Okay? Bo oni echod. So a certain poor man came along, v'omadli baderech, and he stood in front of me on the road. V'omali, and he said, Rabbi, parnasani, Rabbi, please give me something, give me some parnasa. Write that. Amalti lo, so I said to him, Hamtein asher efrok benachamor. He says, wait a moment until I unload something from the donkey. And of course, the implication is, you know, as soon as I've taken off, you know, from the donkey, so I'll give you, you know, something to eat, to drink, and so on and so forth. Lois parked the frog benachamor. So he says, I didn't even have time enough to unload anything from the donkey, archi yotzeso nishmoso, before he died.
Mm-hmm.
He died immediately, you know, even before I had a chance to take him. So halachti v'nafalti al ponav. I went, I fell upon his face, yomarti, and I said, Einai, shelo chosu aleinechot, my eyes who did not have pity upon your eyes, yisumu, that they become blind. Yodai shelo chosu al yodecho, my hands which did not have any pity upon your hands, yizgadmu, let them be cut off. Raglai shelo chosu al raglecho, my feet which did not have pity upon your feet, yizkato, let them be cut off. Velo niskara dati, and I could not find peace in my mind, Achia Marti, until I said, Kol Gufi Yehe Moleshkin, let my entire body be full of boils. Omru Lo, so they said to him, Oi Lonu, Shirinucha Bechach, woe unto us that we see you in this condition. Om Alohem, so he said to them, Oi Li, Imlori Suni Bechach, woe unto me if you did not see me in this condition. In other words, the idea is very simple. It was my wish, you know, that it should happen to me, because I realized how I should have acted immediately and not even waited the few moments that it took, you know, to go and to get something right. Exactly. So because I did not immediately come to it, therefore I brought this punishment upon myself. But this punishment, in a way, is what? It's like a kapara, in other words, for my lack of sensitivity. That's the only way in which I can atone. So that, therefore, what you see me right now, woe unto my soul if I had not, you know, done these things in order to find atonement, you know, for my lack of sensitivity before. So now the Gemara asks and says, "Va'makor lo Nochem Ish Gamzu?" Why did people call him Nochem Ish Gamzu? So he says, "The Chol Milso, the Habesalko Le, whatever would happen unto him." And as Rashi says, even anything bad that happened to him, as Rashi says. Okay. So Omar, he would say, "Gamzu l'toyva." This too, may it be for good. Zimnochado, now they tell us another story concerning him. Once upon a time, Bo the Shadur Yisrael Don Leve Kesar. It was necessary for the Jews to send, or it was necessary to send a, well, you know, all right, my original statement is better. It was necessary for Jews to send a gift to Caesar, in other words, to the Roman Emperor. Okay? Omru, and they said, Man Yezel. Who should go? Yezel Nochem Ish Gamzu. Let Nochem Ish Gamzu go. Why? The Menlumot Benisinku. Because, you know, he's a person to whom miracles are always happening. You know, he's such a great tzaddik, you know, that miracles will always happen for his benefit. So, Shodru Biyodei, Malay Sifta Da Voluntaris Maragolites. They sent with him, literally in his hand, right, but it means with him. They sent with him Maloi Sifto, which means a chest full of Avonim Tovis and Margolios, all kinds of precious jewels. Okay? Ozal, he went, and Bas, the Ahudiro Belila. and he spent the night in a certain dwelling at night. Komu hanach the yore, so the other people who were dwelling in the house, they woke up. V'shaklinu l'sifte, they took his chest, umalun ha'afra, and they filled it with dust. In other words, they took the jewels for themselves and they filled the chest with dust. So, l'bochor, again, you know, the question is whether some of these things in the parenthesis are really part of the text or whether they should be excluded. Okay? But at any rate, I'm taking it the way it is. All right,
day.
So l'bochor, the following day, chazunhu, when he saw, you know, what had happened over there. So Omar, what did he say?
Gamzulatayim.
Okay. Kimota Hosam, when he reached over there, meaning when he finally got to Rome, so Sharinhu Lisifto, Chazanhu the Moliapra. What did they do? They untied, you know, the bindings on the chest, and they saw that it was full of dust. Bo Malkol Mikalinhu Lechulhu. So the king wanted to kill all of them. Who is all of them? So as Rashi says, Sadehim Shal Yisrael, which is a nice way of saying he decided that he wanted to kill
all
the Jews. He wanted to kill the Jews. Okay? Because, you know, he felt that you know, that they had insulted him. Exactly. Okay? Omar, and he said, exactly what he said, he said, Kom chaycha b'Yehudai, the Jews are making fun of me, they're mocking me, right? And then again, maybe it belongs, maybe it doesn't, but anyway, the text says, Omar gamzu l'teva. So Nochem said, this too will work out to be good. Even though he's ready to be executed together with the Jewish people, right? So Osei L'Yohu, Elijah came, Ad Melech Chabinayhu, and he appeared unto the king, that is unto the emperor, like one of their own. In other words, he appeared in the guise of a Roman, right? A Roman nobleman. Omalei, and he said unto him, he said, Dilmo ha'afro me'afro davim abunuhu, maybe this dust is a very special dust. It's the kind of a dust that belonged originally to Abraham Avinu, their father. He didn't say their father Abraham, right? To their father Abraham. The Chihav Shadi Afra, who, when he would throw dust, Havisaife, it would become swords. Gili, when he threw straw, Havagire, then it became arrows. Dichsiv, and as the Pasuk says in Yeshayo, it says, he will make his sword even like the dust, the kashtidov kashto, and his bow even like the straw which is blown in the wind. So, heavier chadam medin. So there happened to be a certain, you know, the word medina has actually two different meanings. Usually we think of the word Medina as meaning a province, but sometimes Medina only simply means, you know, a city, okay? Here in this particular case, probably city is a somewhat better translation rather than province. But you can take it the other way too. Shatnish doesn't make any difference, okay? So at any rate, there was a certain Medina, the Lomotsu Lemichbishe, that the Romans were unable to conquer. So Bodku Mine, so they decided to experiment. They tested out this dust, the Chibshuha, and lo and behold, they were able to conquer it. So when that happened, Ayalei Lebei Gunzei, so then they came into the treasure house of the king, and they filled his chest with all kinds of precious jewels, you know, as a gift to him for having brought them victory, right? V'shadruhu bi'akara rabba. And they sent them forth with great honor. All right, so far so good. Now, he also, now when they came, obviously he was accompanied with a couple of other people because it's in the plural over here. So Besu Behahu and the Yora, they stayed again in the very same place, you know, where they had spent the night on their trip to Rome. Omrulei, and they said to him, Maya Sis Behadach. What are you bringing over here? Or that, you know, they gave you so much glory. So Malahu, so he said to them, my deshakte mehocha abte lahosam. Whatever it is that I took from here, so I'm bringing back over there. Okay. So they decide, something very special about this dust, right? So sasrul dirayhu, so they knocked down their house, the amtinhu levei malka, and they brought, you know, the runes and the dust and so on over there. They brought it to the king. Omule, they said to him, hi apra the isise hocha midadonhu. You know, this dust that I brought over here, it's our own dust. In other words, look, you can supply your whole army, you know, with this dust over here. So, but kuhu. So they tested it out. But they didn't find that it worked. The katlin hu lahanech diyare. And they executed them, these guys. Okay. The moral of the story is that Nochem Gamzu
was a tzaddik.
He was a great tzaddik. He was a tzaddik gomer. Right. Okay. And even the sorry state in which his talmidim found him, but this, as he felt, this was the his way to expiate the sin of not having acted immediately in order to help.
And he
the
went
man
on his
who
trip,
needed assistance.
He was in this condition?
No. Obviously, this happened before. First, we have the story, you know, to tell about, you know, he's in this condition, okay? And then we have the story, and as I said, the connection to the previous one is the fact, you know, that the house, he lived in a house which was about to collapse.
Right.
Okay. But because as long as his bed was still placed in the house, so that the house didn't collapse. The minute that the students took it out, then it collapsed. So, you know, this is similar to a previous story,
right,
which we learned about the removal of the barrels of wine, if you remember. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, that was the original, but they want to know why was he called Nochem Ish Gamzu.
Right, right.
So they tell the story, you know, to...
Isn't there a character, Job, did he ever say Gamzu was over?
No.
He didn't.
If anything, he cursed the day that he was born.
Oh,
he
did, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's one of the great tragedies, right?
Is that the same Gamzu with the Baki, the
That's the story told about Rabbi Akiva. Yeah. But it's similar in nature, you know, to this. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now, we're talking about all kinds of great tzaddikim over here, but remember, the Mishnah was dealing with when do we have to shri, declare a fast and have special prayers and so on in order to avert calamities. So one of the calamities that we saw is if there is a pestilence in a city which kills people, right? So the text of the Mishnah that they're now going to discuss, it says, Ezehi Dever. What do we mean by Dever or pestilence, right? So he says, Ir HaMotziah Chamesh Be'os Ragli. If you have a city in which it can produce 500 foot soldiers, naturally it means at one time, in other words it has a big enough population in order to supply 500 recruits for the army,
yeah,
right?
Like
yeah, which is a large number, right? Mm-hmm. So in that case we learned that if there are three masons one day after another, so then this is declared to be a dever, right? It is a pestilence for which we have to pray to avert it. So Tana Rabbanan, so now they quote a Baraisa which says, Ira Motziah Chamesh Meyos the Elef Ragli, a city which can produce 1,500 foot soldiers, Kigon, as for example Kfar Akko. Alright, V'yotzu Heimenu Tisha Mesim B'Shloshi Yomim, and there occurred 9 deaths, obviously, you know, from you know, the effects of a plague within 3 days. Ze'achazeth, you know, the day after day, in other words, 3, 3, 3, right? Harezeh Dever, this is Dever also. The Yom Echad, But what if you had, for example, 9 people who died, all of them on one day? Oh, Bedalad Yomim. Or let's say it wasn't spaced out that it was 3, 3, 3, but simply it was spaced out over 4 days. Then in that case, what? Ain't a devil. This is not devil. Why not? For the simple reason then that we would say that it was only coincidental, or as Rashi says, Ba'at Rai. Just happened that way, that's all. Okay? But it's only coincidental. The year Hamotziah, and the Baraisa continues and says, V'yir Hamotziah Hamesh Me'az Ragli, Kegon Kfar Amikom. Okay? And a city which can produce 500 foot soldiers, as for example, Kfar Amikom, the Yotzbe Menu Shlosha Mesa Megimel Yomim, and three deaths occurred, the Gibel Yomim, within 3 days. It means, of course, one each day, successively. Areza Deva, then this also is Deva. All right, so we see two things. We see that, first of all, there has to be a consistency, and also that the number of dead has to correspond to the size of the population of the town. And if it's under these circumstances that we see that it's happening, then it's not simply coincidental, but it is actually as a result of the plague, and for that, then Masrin. You have to fast, and you have to say special prayers. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's sort of an anticipated sense, right? Hareza Dever. But, B'yoyim Echad, right? If it's all of these deaths occur on Monday, Obe'abo Yomim, or over a span of 4 days, then ain't the devil. Okay, it's not. All right, so now we find out a story that it's not necessarily so. Drokeres, wherever that is, name of some town, Ir Hamotziah Chamesh Me'az Ragli Hava. Okay, this was a city which also produced, you know, was able to furnish 500-foot soldiers. V'yotzim imenu shlosha meisim yim echod. And three people died the very same day, one day. So before we said what? That if they all die in one day, it's not Deber, right? But nevertheless, Gozer Rab Nachman Rab Chisto Ta'anisa. Rab Nachman Rab Chisto proclaimed a fast for that day. In other words, he felt that it was Deber, and you know, we had to do something, okay? And then Omer Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, you know, he wanted to find, you know, one of the earlier authorities to sort of back up his decision. So he says, come on, in accordance with whose opinion am I doing what I'm doing? He says, Rabbi Meir. It's in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Meir, the Omar, who said, Richak Negichesov Chayov Kirav Negichesov Leikol Shekein. This is in reference to find it in Baba Kama, Baba Basra. You know, the Torah says that if an ox gores another animal, okay? So, if it happens once, okay? So we call this a short time. If it happens 2 times, also, he still remains the short Tom. Tom, of course, in the sense that, you know, he's innocent. It has not been established that he is a gorer by nature, okay? He's not an Al Gore by nature, okay? Doesn't gore. So, if it happens 3 times, then already it becomes muad, okay? What do I mean by muad? Muad means literally that, you know, testimony is given concerning this ox. In other words, you establish the fact, you know, that this is a goring ox. Okay? So, Rabbi Meir said, yeah, so the Gemara over there says again, if, you know, the animal gored one day, then it gored another day, and gored another day, in other words, it was spaced out. This is what they mean, okay? If it was spaced out, then in that case, you know, he's not muad. But what happens if all three, you know, 3 times on the same day? So, according to the Chachomim, he might still be considered, you know, an innocent ox if it happened all three, you know. But according to Rabbi Meir, don't take a chance. if it happens one after another, even if it's the same day, then this is right. This is Naksa when he was the Shor Muad. Okay? So, Rabbi Meir then says, then, Richak Negichesav, in other words, if it's spaced, if his Negicha, if his goring is spaced out, then in that particular case, Chayav. Then, and we say that, you know, even if it's spaced out, you know, it becomes liable after, you know, time has passed. Certainly, Kira Nikotsav, like Koshikain, all the more reason that if it happens so frequently, that he definitely has to be, you know, a dangerous ox, okay? So, if that's the case, applying it to what? You don't wait, according to Rab Nachman by Yitzchak, right? It says, don't wait to proclaim that this is a Dever by saying that, you know, three Mason died in one day. It's not an accident. You have to be ready, you know. It's a sign that, right, that it's a critical condition and you should take action about it. Okay? So, Omalei Rab Nachman Rab Chisda Rab Nachman Yitzchak. Okay? So Rab Nachman, the son of Rab Chisda, said to Rab Nachman by Yitzchak, he said, Leikumar, Leisle Gabon, please, why don't you come and live with us? In other words, you are such a great scholar, why do you waste your time in Drukart, which is a one-horse town someplace, okay?
That's the one where...
Right, yeah. Come and live, you know, in a big city where, you know, we have all kinds of great chachomim, and you'll join our company. So Omalei, so he answered him, and he said to him, that Tanina, I've learned that Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Loi mekomer shalode mechavdei, it's not the place where a man lives that brings him honor, Elo odo mechaved es mekomer, but rather it's the individual who brings honor to the place in which he lives. Shekei matzina b'hafetz, of course, I mean, the implication is clear. In other words, even if I live in a small town, right, I'm bringing it honor. And the fact that I would go to a big city, this does not bring me any more honor than, you know, I am who I am. So. And he brings proof also from the Torah. What is the proof in the Torah? He says, Shekeim Atzin Bahar Sinai. We find in connection with Mount Sinai, Shekolz Mansha Shechinu Shruyo Lov, as long as the Divine Presence was resting upon Mount Sinai, Omer Torah, then the Torah says over there, of course this is, you know, the story of the preparation for Mount Sinai, it says, Gam atzoveh habokor al yuel buchorahu, the sheep and the ox, you know, the sheep and the cattle should not graze